Warning, Star Trek From the Holodeck contains adult language and discussions. If you're easily offended, do not continue to listen.
Lock it alone!
Fire.
Holodeck 3 program is reinstated.
Open sesame!
Commander Klingon vessel, we are energizing transporter beam. Now.
Hello, welcome everyone to Star Trek From the Holodeck, the Discovery Edition. I am Michael Flores, your host and captain of the USS Rain Man Digital, and at the helm, paying attention to when he is off of work so he can hit the holodeck and act out his six sick fantasies, is David. Hello, David.
I'm just working on my program for my Tilly program for the holodeck now.
A Tilly program?
Yes.
Can I visit the holodeck at that time as well?
No. This is a private holodeck.
Oh, it's a holosuite.
It's a holosuite.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So we are here today to discuss season 3, episode 2 of Star Trek Discovery, titled "Far From Home." I will have to say immediately and right off the bat, the visuals in this series is stunning.
Wow.
Just utterly gorgeous. The shot of the Discovery flying through the atmosphere of the planet, that's art, David.
Yeah, absolutely. That ranks up there with some of the most iconic ship crashing scenes I've ever seen.
It's just gorgeous.
It's gorgeous.
The framing and how well the cinematographer worked with the VFX artist is a testament to the skill level involved in this show.
Yeah.
Amazing.
And the designs. I mean, absolutely down to the art. The artist renditions of everything. Everything looks... It's really difficult for me to actually put it in words, but this sounds silly, but everything looks so realistic, but so gorgeously sci-fi. It almost has kind of like this.
It's classy.
Classy.
There's a classiness.
There's a classiness to it.
Yes.
Retro vibe cool.
This is the classiest Trek series of all time. There's just this elegance to the series.
A blend between TNG and TOS.
Possibly.
I mean, if you look at it, the designs themselves are elegant. The VFX, some of the ship designs and some of the even like the designs of down to the costumes.
Well, just the creativity behind. Look at the planet in this episode and the floating debris and pieces of planet above. There's so much creative thought going into how they're going to make this look.
Yeah.
Eventually, though, I think we're going to have to see some smaller episodes because we have 2 episodes in and I think they've blown the budget because I'm sure they've used a considerable amount of the budget for these opening 2 episodes. I believe this episode, just like the last, were location shoots as well. That was a big thing on the internet the other day. Alex Kurtzman was talking to numerous outlets about their decision to shoot overseas, which... typically, all of Star Trek has been shot within the studio system in Hollywood, even Picard. And the fact that they went overseas, I want to say Iceland is where a lot of these location shoots took place. So we have those travel days, but I'm wondering if they wanted to go bigger in scope for some of those landscape shots without having to push the VFX budget over the edge. And they somehow just found a way to balance out the costs. It would be interesting to find out the cost ratio of some of these decisions because typically travel days are expensive and that's why people have moved to VFX.
Mm-hmm.
But then okay, possibly to build an entire new landscape that looks different.
You need locations.
Yeah, maybe the VFX budget wouldn't be able to sustain that. So they weighed the cost and said, hey, it would be cheaper to go hit up a location.
The amazing thing to me is I just looked up like the reported estimate of every episode of Star Trek Discovery.
Mm-hmm.
8 to 8.5 million per episode.
Jesus. That's no joke, though.
That is no joke. But
I mean, but then compare that to like Game of Thrones, where they were given $50 million per episode.
Exactly. When you put that
imagine
into
scope, if Discovery gets to that point.
Oh, man.
Dude, we wouldn't know what to do.
I would hope they would actually bring that budget, you know, make that budget worth it.
Give me some Tilly and 20K. Oh, just 20K Tilly.
That's so awesome.
Just blow the budget on that.
just give me Tilly on a beach scene.
A beach scene. Romantic.
Something. Yeah.
That's so romantic of you. I just want to get good, down and dirty. Give me Tilly behind a dumpster in an alley.
Jeez.
Why did you have to take us there? Actually, I did, didn't I?
You did. That's what I was going to say. I was trying to be romantic with Tilly.
Yeah.
You just wanted to get down and dirty and say, hey, here's $50.
All right. Okay. So just spend. I don't know how much they're spending in this season. Is that estimate from this season or just
that is
in general?
An estimate from that. That is from season one, season two and season three.
Yeah. Okay.
So they've been working on an estimated budget per episode of 8 to 8.5 million.
Okay. That's fine. Just be careful because these last two episodes have been rather big
in scope.
Just don't spend so much of your budget at the beginning that we end up having a complete failure like the finale episode of Picard where we had a copy and paste extravaganza. So please slow down.
Slow down. You gotta take it easy.
Please don't do that to this show. Because I'm a fucking Uber Discovery fan at this point.
I am too. I mean, just in two episodes, dude, this season has put me really comfortably with
Discovery. I don't like that, Dave.
I'm nervous
because when I like something this much, I don't know if I can take that type of rejection, you know? When they
when they fail.
Yeah, please just don't do this to me.
I know. But the sad part is like the only reason why we're doing that is because of how catastrophic the Star Trek franchise went with Picard. And then now you see a steady incline with
lower decks. Yeah. So the short treks
helped a little.
Short treks were great. Time. Yeah.
And then you had Lower Decks and then suddenly you have Discovery. And in two episodes, I'm like going, okay, it seems we're back on track.
I hope so. Because so far, so good. And Dave, to make things even better, we had a Western-esque Trek episode.
Yes, that was awesome.
I was not expecting that.
Neither was I.
I mean, and it wasn't just, hey guys, here's a Western, we're going to do certain shots. No, it was everything you would expect from a Western with all the bells and whistles, the Western genre tropes, the go-to fucking saloon doors
and spurs.
Spurs and fucking Jake Weber as the guest star.
Yes.
Of Helen Wheels fame.
Dude, were you laughing when Jake Weber shows up and you hear spurs?
Dude.
And I was why is a guy in space wearing spurs?
I wasn't laughing, David. I was coming. Yeah. Jake Weber's fucking amazing, dude.
Oh, my God, dude.
I'm a huge fan of his work.
Yes.
He was so good. There was an AMC show that actually you Star Trek fans would probably know this by now because another one of our greats came from Hell on Wheels, and that's Captain Pike, who was the lead of Hell on Wheels.
Yep.
So now here's Jake Weber, who was kind of the villain for about two seasons, kind of the villain on Hell on Wheels. Dude, he is so good, and he just is so captivating that the moment he enters frame, your eyes are just on him because you're waiting for him to do something. He doesn't need to say a fucking word.
No.
It's all in the way he emotes, his body language. It sells the entire thing.
And dude, by the end of the episode, I was like so thrilled that he walked away.
Yes, thank God.
He got to walk away. I'm like, no, don't kill him. I want this character, even though this character is so despicable, I want this character to come back because of number one, I love the actor, but like the fact within this one episode, bringing him in, you've introduced us to a character that I really want to see more about.
Dave, I know. I have hopes that, well.
And dude, when he was playing opposite Michelle Yeoh.
Oh my God. It was
holy crap. That was cool. I mean, dude, if you want to see actor versus actor, that was cool.
I had hopes that he was going to be a recurring villain because the way he was introduced, but I think the way it ended, it might just be a one and done.
Yeah.
And I know we're dealing with larger scale threats in Discovery, that's kind of the direction Star Trek has gone. It's not about those more intimate moments anymore in terms of villains. It's more about the larger scale obstacles, world, cosmic ending type of events. And I get it. I understand we got to go big or go home in this generation of TV viewers. That's what the audience wants. But I miss the smaller scale villains, the archetypes that were a part of the older Trek films. And I could see the way they set up Jake Weber. I'm like, what if he's not the main villain, but what if he's a reoccurring threat?
See that? I would love that.
And he becomes more of an intimate villain to a specific character. Maybe Saru, maybe Georgiou, maybe fucking Tilly.
Oh, the way he treated Tilly? Yeah.
And he's just this ongoing threat to where you build this intimacy between foe and hero. To where we get a moment like Khan and Kirk.
But like, dude, the character that Jake Weber portrays is the character of Sarah.
Fits that classic archetype, right?
The
Nero, the Khan, the Chang.
Yeah.
All of those.
And he fits what Discovery in episode one, the theme that they're trying to show is like these type of characters are rampant around this time frame because there's no Federation to keep them in check.
Right.
And this is the type of character that you're going to have to deal with. And I love that. I love the fact that basically,
if only the Rangers were here from Picard to take care of things.
Maybe they got wiped out.
Yeah. I will say this. We are two episodes in and the last two episodes of Discovery have felt more like, now get this, Dave. Because I'm like, why is this so fucking good? The last two episodes of Discovery have felt more like the original series era than Discovery 1 and 2. And they were actually both in the original series era. How does that work?
I know.
This future setting, Dave, has allowed the writers to strip away the comforts of our characters and hurdle them into a place where they do not feel safe. This is going to make room for great scenes that could create compromising situations for our characters, things that we are familiar with from the original series and from our films. Scenarios just like in this very episode, they are forced to make a decision. Will they make the right decision as a Starfleet officer, or will they throw out their principles when under duress? That entire scenario and using Georgiou as the devil on your shoulder, let's just kill them all, to nudge Saru, to nudge Tilly, to even nudge the individual that was given the power. And yet he made the right decision because he witnessed he witnessed and experienced what the Federation and Starfleet stand for. He witnessed it straight out. So then he made the right decision and let the character go.
Yes.
The villain of the episode go.
Yeah.
I mean, these scenarios are fantastic. Zarer is what his name was, right? Zarer?
Yeah, Zarer. Z-A-R-E-H.
He also aided in creating a tone that fits this new setting. And I don't know if you picked up on this, but even he was not happy. Even though he said, hey, the burn was great for me, there was a sense of nihilism.
Yes.
That just exuded from him.
And I kept thinking to myself, is that just because how Jake Weber is portraying it? But no, that by the end of the episode, you feel that Zara is a product of what the burn did to everybody in the galaxy.
There's no hope.
There's no hope. And like the fact that when you look at the character's background, and I actually have his memory alpha pulled up right now.
Mm-hmm.
Prior to in his history, the first paragraph that it shows here is prior to 3189, he assumed the role of courier for the colony by beheading the planet's previous courier. He supplied the planet's mining settlement with whatever it could not produce for itself and held immense power over the Cordnite miners. As a result, he also has experience with the planet's parasitic ice and claimed to have seen it go down a person's throat on one occasion. This is a guy who's seen messed up shit.
Yeah.
And that's what happens.
And that's why this season is off to such a great start, because you're not just introducing characters because, hey, we want there to be, you know, a little hint, a little wink, wink. There's a mystery just around the corner. They're not worrying about the greater mystery. Yes, they're building on the myth arc. Absolutely, you need to with a series like that,
yes,
like this, that's serialized. But they're focusing on just telling a story in that moment and to aid in making sure we understand the context of the setting and the new normal in this time period. And the fact that they give him this, he exudes nihilism.
Nihilism.
It helps with the idea that there's no hope.
It's almost reminiscent of Khan. When Khan basically is left on SETI Alpha 5 and he has to watch everyone die in his colony around him. And he becomes this bitter, almost like what you said, nihilistic character. Mm-hmm. That's what happens when you lose hope.
And that's why he leaves Kirk on a dead planet, buried alive.
And
alive.
And you look at Zara.
I was waiting for that.
I was waiting for that because he's like, the way he fused the Federation too is kind of like, it's almost like he kind of looks down at it.
Well, because he lost.
Jaded.
Because they let him down.
Yes.
That's what it felt like. It felt like, fuck the Federation.
Yeah.
Because look at how we live now. Where were you when all of this happened? And that's what happened. See how we're getting all this from that scenario? It's within the subtext. And that's what happens when you have a well-written episode with great actors working together.
Yeah. And also great dialogue. Because Sarah, throughout the entire thing, he's not being argumentative. Mm. If you look at the dialogue that was given, Zara's not being argumentative. He is spelling out facts.
It's just facts.
That's it's it. Just facts.
This that is how it is.
That is right in front of him.
Yeah.
And like, there's Saru, who is like the epitome of, we can help, we can do this. And Saru's coming from a good place, don't get me wrong. But Saru's talking to a person that
has no understanding.
Has no understanding of it.
He does not understand a word coming from your mouth.
And it's so awesome in that moment.
It's because so alien.
It's so alien. And it fits into what this episode wanted to do, was show first contact, what Saru was excited about. And Saru was warning everybody, we're going into unknown regions. We don't know how these people react to us. And what ends up happening is he has no idea how these people would react to someone like him, who's coming from the Federation saying, we will help you. And all these people are like going, are you fucking kidding me? Do you know what happened?
Yeah. Well, and not just that, because you have the whole aspect of nihilism and the idea that there's no hope. And that's essentially the theme of the season, is bringing you hope.
Yes.
It works because of what Discovery showing up represents. Discovery showing up literally represents hope has arrived. It's in all the marketing.
Yeah.
And listen, you can market all day long, but if it's not in the series, your marketing is just going to fall
apart. It also, it's also in the tone and pacing of each and the past two episodes. I mean, when you get to the very end, dude, when I see Burnham's face on the view screen, I got a little, I have to be honest, I got a little giddy.
Yeah.
And I had a little positive say, oh my God, thank God Burnham's here.
Okay, is this, that's why I think they found it, Dave. They found the show finally. And yes, I was okay with the first season and I enjoyed the hell out of the second season. But I think, I know it's early still, but I think
it's early.
The third season found itself because I got giddy when Burnham showed up on the screen. I'm like, what is this? This is the type of feelings I have when I'm watching the reruns of TNG and Voyager and Deep Space Nine. Holy shit. It just gave me the exact same feeling that the other Star Trek shows. And I have not gotten that feeling yet from Discovery. The familiar Star Trek chills. And I got it.
Yeah. And it's amazing to me that I got those same chills from a scene with Burnham. Because like when Burnham shows up, I'm filled with hope. And all of a sudden Burnham tells the crew, I've been waiting for you for a full year.
Listen, Burnham, I'm waiting for you as well. I mean, especially with those long dreads, please.
You can have fun with Burnham. I'm sorry. I want to be with Tilly.
I'll murder you for Tilly as well. I'm greedy.
You're Zara. You're like going, I'm going to shoot you. And then I'm going to just take everything for myself.
Forget the money. Give me your women, please.
Give me your women.
That's it. All right. Live read. Get more Star Trek from the holodeck every month by subscribing to our Patreon page. There are two specific tiers that holodeck listeners would love. The $3 tier, which is our behind the scenes discussions, bonus shows, pre-shows, and also the $5 tier. Our podcast tier gives you everything from the $3 tier, but also additional two full podcasts a month. So if you want to help us stay on the air, please head over to patreon.com/rainmandigital and pledge. And of course, if you want to go annual, you can. You don't need to just do monthly. patreon.com/rainmandigital. All right, so let's get into this episode officially. The episode was directed by Olatunde Asunami, written by Michelle Paradise, Jenny Lumet, and Alex Kurtzman. So it's the exact same three writers that wrote the first episode. The synopsis: after the USS Discovery crash lands on a strange planet, the crew finds themselves racing against time to repair their ship. Meanwhile, Saru and Tilly embark on a perilous first contact mission in hopes of finding Burnham. Okay, so this episode didn't push much of the bigger story forward. But it didn't need to.
Yes.
Nor was it designed to do so. This was more or less the epilogue of last episode.
Yeah.
Of the last episode. And served as simply a way to frame our characters and show them work together in this new environment.
And the thing I really liked about it was they showed the fact that since last season, yes, they became a unified crew. By season's end. But at the beginning of this season, they're a unified crew. However, because you see that they care for each other and everything else, but they're still trying to find the perfect chemistry together. Like pairing them up individually in pairs.
Well, yeah, that also allows you to cover more ground as well in terms of writing. You know, putting characters together, making them talk, making them interact. It helps with fleshing out two or three characters at a time. But outside of that, not only did this episode serve to just kind of frame or reframe where everyone is at emotionally and quite literally physically, but also it felt like an episode that, and correct me if I'm wrong or if you disagree, but it also felt like an episode that was designed to showcase Saru's ability as a leader.
Oh, absolutely.
He's
absolutely.
No longer the docile prey species he was.
Dude, his standoffs with Georgiou and then also dealing with Zara that's the Saru that this crew needs.
And maybe he's not I'll Dasa have to anymore. Right. And maybe I'll have to go back on what I said when I said I don't think Saru was it in a pre-show or a regular show that I said this? I don't remember, but I had said to you that I don't think Saru is going to be the captain this year. It's either going to be someone new or it's going to be Burnham. And I said that based on some previews I saw, but they're really trying to show his leadership in this episode. This episode really showed how he's acclimated to the change in his body chemistry, and he's found a balance. If you remember last season, he was a little off kilter with his bodily changes because of his bodily changes. And perhaps we will get Captain Saru after all.
And
we do need a captain. I mean, yes. Come on now. I mean, we've now gone, almost a season and a half without a captain?
Pretty much.
Yeah, I mean, just look how he took charge of Giorgio, like you said.
And it wasn't even like, I remember in the second season, if you had this similar scenario and similar dialogue between Saru and Giorgio, Saru would go from docile to out of control. Out of control. Here, he's more controlled. He rationalizes it out. He, honestly, in this one single episode, Saru became almost kind of like the caretaker or the father figure.
He was a captain.
He was the captain. He started acting like Captain Pike. All the decisions he made would be something that I was telling myself, this is what Pike would have actually chosen to do. Pike would have actually stood in Giorgio's face when she's like saying, we need to go out there and basically just ransack whatever we can find. But instead, we're going to keep the prime directive. We're going to do first contact. We're going to negotiate.
Right. And that's why, Dave, I have a feeling that he will end up being the captain, because they spent much of the episode doing just that, highlighting his abilities as a leader, as a true leader. Even the way he took charge of Giorgio, I mean, that's no easy task. And yet he was able to talk her down and she listened. I think we're going to get Captain Saru.
I think we will. And I really do hope so, because in last episode, me and you were discussing, well, what if they go with Captain Burnham? And everyone,
I don't know if I want that.
I don't know if I want it.
Like, I do like Burnham, but I feel like she has a lot to learn still.
And I don't think being a captain is the path for that character.
Not right now.
Not right now.
She is important, and she's going to always have an important part to play. She is the lead of the series, arguably.
But I think that being a captain, she's going to have to be something bigger than being a captain.
She's going
to
be a fleet admiral. Saru, you want to be a captain? Good. Come be an admiral. Dude, that'd be horrible.
That'd be horrible.
Admiral Burnham? Fleet Admiral Burnham? Yeah. So outside of that, the dynamics of the bridge crew is still a work in progress. I do like how they made it a point to once again highlight each of them. Those moments of characterization is vital.
Yeah.
And this season really, really needs to be about giving each of them a moment. Obviously, we have our main faces like Tilly, Culber, Stamets, Jet Reno, Saru, Burnham, Giorgio. But then we also have, I believe you say her name is Nihon. Wasokun, Detmer. Rise, Bryce.
The Detmer thing has me interested, because I'm going, why are they focusing on Detmer's honestly having issues? And I'm going, something strange about Detmer. And I think Detmer this season is going to play an important role, whether it's
she's going to compete with Tilly for hottest redhead. Who's the hottest redhead?
I
am
Tilly.
No, I am. And then Saru's like, well, ladies, there's only one way to solve this dilemma. Take your shirts off.
Touch my ganglia.
Jesus, David. He doesn't have ganglia anymore.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He took them off.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't have any issues with this show. I I actually enjoy the show. It's a weird feeling. Like, I don't understand the feelings I'm not having.
I'm telling you, it's because, like, we've had such a lull in bad stuff. Getting something good is, like, it feels fantastic.
Right. Yes. But one lingering issue that's not a really big a deal. It's not that big of a deal per se. It's not a deal breaker. But who the fuck is the bridge crew? This show has been a bit of a revolving door, and I'm hoping we're going to finally be on solid ground and we can have those designations, because do we even know who the actual bridge crew is? In TNG, we had our side characters. Same thing with Deep Space Nine and Voyager and, of course, the original series and Enterprise. But we also had our side characters. But we knew specifically who our bridge crew were, right?
Yeah.
In TNG, because that's the easiest to go to right now. Deanna Troi, Geordi, Worf, Wesley Crusher, Data, Riker, Picard, right? Did I miss anybody? Possibly Dr. Crusher?
Possibly Dr. Crusher,
yeah. But then we had so many side characters as well that popped in, but they weren't bridge crew. Who's the fucking bridge crew? Is Stamets a part of the bridge crew? Is Jet Reno a part of the bridge crew?
Tig.
I mean, who the fuck is the bridge crew? Let's get some designations here officially.
Honestly, yeah. I mean,
we need to have a ready room moment where Saru's all, everyone to my ready room. And we're like, okay, you're the crew. I get it now. Thank you.
Thank you.
Because who the fuck is it?
And yeah.
Is that just me being a Star Trek baby? Because that's something we're accustomed to, that we've always known who the... Is it command crew or bridge crew?
Bridge crew.
It's bridge crew,
it's
right?
Bridge crew.
Yeah. I mean, D Space Nine, it was Dax, Bashir, Odo, O'Brien, Sisko, Kira. Enterprise was... Don't ask me. I forget all the names.
You got Archer. You got...
The listeners get it.
Yeah.
But... do you think we kind of need that officially stated finally? Like, hey, listen, we know who our cast is.
But who's the bridge crew?
Who's the bridge crew?
Because, like, the thing is, when you look at the bridge crew of Discovery, unfortunately, when we think they're a part of the bridge crew, they end up getting killed or getting disappeared.
And that's why I said that we have kind of a revolving door for the last two seasons. And I just want some fucking consistency.
Yeah. And I'm hoping that we get it this season.
Is it just me or no? You do agree?
Like, no, I do agree.
We need a little, and I understand, because the show's been kind of in a weird transition period since season one, with showrunner and then direction that they want to go. And again, according to Kurtzman, this is it. This is where they're staying from now on. There's no more changing setting or locations. That this is it. So hopefully now we'll get that consistency so we understand who our crew is. And with that, we're also going to learn more about each of them. Because we do need those moments with each of them. We need to have an episode that's Bryce-centric. And that's Bryce-centric. And Detmer-centric and Nuhan-centric. We need to get those episodes. The entire episode doesn't need to revolve around them, but we need to find creative reasons, like last season when they gave that one specific episode to Ahsoka.
Yes.
If you remember, she was part of the away team with Pike. And it helped us to get to know her a bit better.
Mm-hmm.
And it does seem like they have started something with Detmer, as you had led us to.
Mm-hmm.
Which I was happy with. If they give her a subplot that ties back in, that will hopefully be something that has been missing. You know, it will be something, or I should say it has been something that has been missing for sure. And if they can use this as a rope to, you know, bring in miscellaneous characters like Awosika and Ryze, Bryce, and bring them all together in some subplot, I'll be happy.
Yeah.
And this show will go from, nearly flawless to flawless.
To flawless.
Because that's the only thing that's missing, is that we really need those character moments.
Because
that's what we're used to in Star Trek. And if you're a show like Picard, let's say, where the show is titled Picard, And most of the story revolves. I'm not going the direction you think. I'm not.
I was like, going, okay.
I'm not going to get negative. Okay. No, I'm saying in a show like Picard, I get why Picard is at the center, right? Or at least he should have been. Yeah. But David, stop it. But I get the concept. If it's about Picard, I would never have gotten mad.
Yes. Yes.
About us not delving into other characters, because obviously it's about fucking Picard.
Picard.
But now you introduce in Discovery, you have 12 different characters and they're in the background. If they're there continually, we need to learn about them.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, Discovery, it just feels a little weak and we don't care.
Because Discovery.
And they are getting there.
Yeah. Discovery isn't just about Burnham. Discovery is about the crew of the USS Discovery.
Now it is.
And like.
Because originally it wasn't.
And I agree with you. I think it started in season one, where they decided to throw us a curveball, in because it's the first time ever in any Star Trek series that I can recall where the first season our captain gets taken out. Lorca got taken out because Lorca was the original captain of the USS Discovery.
Right. Well, don't forget Georgiou got taken out as well.
Yeah, then Georgiou gets taken out, and then when they get taken out, they get replaced by a captain of a different ship.
So we still don't have a captain.
We still don't have a captain. And on top of that, it all culminates into that one scene that me and you have always stated is one of our favorite scenes in season two, because it's so simplistic that it fixes so many problems, is when Pike comes in. All right, I can't do this. I need names. Give me your name.
Yeah.
Give me your name.
And we were both like, okay, you literally fixed one of the biggest issues in season one.
Yeah.
We didn't know the names of anyone.
We didn't know the names
of anyone. And in 30 seconds, you gave us the names of every single character.
And then they were on a good roll, and they introduced to fantastic characters like Aram. Aram was a standout in season two, but you ended up killing her off.
Right.
And then suddenly Aram's gone.
Well, one of our listeners brought this up a while back, and I think it might have been during the Picard run. And they had said that they really missed the episodic vibe because it opened up the possibilities for more character-centric episodes. Like, you were able to delve into different characters because it was episodic and you had a close into story and you didn't have to worry about the serialized format.
Yeah.
That dealt with the bigger story that focused around a group of characters like Burnham. And I would agree with that, but I feel like if you just find great ways to bring these characters in, there's plenty of serialized TV shows that allow fantastic character development. They just have to want to. They have to do it.
And again,
I don't want to get too far. I kind of want to cut this topic short because I don't want to sound like we're complaining, because I'm not. I feel like season two was a great start with getting where we needed to be with these characters. And I have a feeling season three is going to continue that. And we're finally going to really get to know them, because we have the Detmer aspect. And also Tilly had her moments this episode as well. I've enjoyed the consistency of her development over the last two seasons. I mean, Burnham, Saru, and Tilly have been the most consistent part of the series. And understandably so.
Yeah.
They're the main faces of Discovery at this point. They tend to be everyone's favorites. They are the through lines for most of our personal arcs and narrative. Tilly is such a unique character in the Trek universe as well. She's capable, vulnerable,
hot,
very relatable, hot,
redhead,
very grounded as a character. Her quirks, optimism, her empathy, her big boobs keep the episodes on track. And when familiarity, and when we're in a familiar territory, we have a familiar tone. So I feel like everything she's doing to keep the story on track is working, because she's unique, but she's all, you got me all turned around.
I want Tilly.
Let me start over. What was I saying? Tilly's being unique. Yeah. Okay. So Tilly is such a unique character in the Trek verse. Take two. she is vulnerable, but she's also capable. And at the same time, this all makes her relatable.
Yeah.
And because she's relatable, she's now a grounded character. And because of her quirks, her optimism, and her empathy, it keeps the episodes on track and keeps us within a familiar territory when it comes to tone. The yes. tone of Star Trek.
Tone and
so
theme.
It doesn't theme. Even and theme. It doesn't matter how dark we go. It doesn't matter that we saw someone's insides get completely burned from the inside out in this episode. It doesn't. I know it a doesn't. Lot of Star Trek babies scream foul ball when there's violence. But violence is just, it's mature, guys. Listen, we're not, this isn't the fucking Pleasantville, okay? We're in modern eras. Violence is what we get on TV.
And also,
now, I'm not saying I want an action pack, Steven Seagal, Stallone, Arnold, Bloodfest. I'm not saying that. But I'm saying that you can have gore and not lose the heart of what Star Trek is. And that's why it's important to have characters like Tilly, because she keeps us in that familiar area.
Area, yes.
Does that make sense?
No, yeah. Because, like, Tilly, the characters like Tilly, they, especially in regards to Discovery in this season, are very important because they're supposed to symbolize the ideals of the Federation.
Right.
And
that's exactly what I put in my notes. She embodies everything that Starfleet and the Federation stands for.
Yeah. And it's amazing, in particular in this episode, playing it opposite Zara, the way Zara actually treats Tilly. And it's creepy, but it's also kind of like he undermines her. He basically says, oh, you go out there, you'll survive.
Sweetheart,
you'll survive. And it's that condescending tone, because Tilly represents these ideals that are so opposite of Zara.
It's foreign to him. Yeah.
And he's like going, you know, I'm going to prove you wrong, you little idealist. You go out there and you face the real world then. And that's why, particularly in this episode, the use of Tilly was really important, because Tilly is the one that represents the ideals of the Federation. But on top of that, she represents the ideals of everyone like us who are hardcore Star Trek fans that believe in the ideals of the Federation.
She is 100% optimism.
Yeah.
And sometimes it makes me sick.
It does, but like,
but it's needed.
Needed, and particularly in this episode.
It only makes me sick because I'm very pessimistic, you know, but like, I get this is what Star Trek's about, and we need that character that's just 100%, you know, puppy dogs, rainbows and sunshine.
And unicorns, you know?
Yeah.
And like, particularly in this episode, when you have to emphasize this is your setting, okay? The world, the universe, the entire universe of Star Trek in this particular time frame, it's not the Federation's time. It's not the time of idealism. It's not the time of perfection. All of perfection is gone. It's broken. So, like, you put someone like a character like Tilly, who is the idealist, in a very jaded, very broken setting, their idealistic nature comes out even a hundredfold more. And it's something to show their theme of basically Discovery is about Discovery themselves is the hope of Star Trek right now. They're in a broken universe.
The hope of the Federation.
The hope of the Federation. Yeah. And dude, I thought the parallels, there's so many parallels in this episode that I'm super comfortable with the writers of Discovery Season 3 now, because I can see that they understand Star Trek writing, because that's what Star Trek writing is all about.
They do.
Showing great. Parallels yeah. and showing concepts that are more than just the flashiness of phasers yeah. and teleporters,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah. Completely agree. So we have Tilly and Saru on one side, right?
Yeah.
All of that uber optimism and Starfleet ideology, right? But then we have someone that I can relate to, my spirit animal. And that's Jet Reno.
Dude, she was used to perfection in this episode.
Dude, I really like, she might be Oh man, she might be one of my favorite characters on the show.
Well, because like
she, they use her so fucking well.
Yes.
They never squander a moment. I mean, when the guy, when she says this guy cleaning up
hazmat suit,
and he's all like, my name's actually so-and-so. She's like, yeah, I've already forgotten that. Yeah. And just like, yeah, I love this. I love you.
She's your spirit animal.
Dude, she's great.
Well, and especially like the way they use Jet in this one is perfect because it fixed one of the problems that's been going on for the past two seasons, which is a character that on record I've been saying I'm rooting for. I like him, but he needs to get somewhere.
Yeah. Well, I agree. And this is probably my only negative.
But in this episode, it's not really a negative.
No, it's not. It's not. And they need, and I'm hoping they move past this, but I'm over Stamets.
Yeah.
I'm just, dude, like you have been in the same place for three seasons.
Exactly.
You're not interesting. You were for about seven episodes in the first season. And since then, you have just been stuck in this rut. And I'm hoping they find a place for him to go.
Yes.
Because he's not a bad character. There's tons of things they can do with him, but they have to let him grow this season.
Yeah.
Enough with tying him down to a relationship. If he was a woman, if he was a female character, there would be so much outrage on the internet saying, why is he so beholden to a relationship? Why is the entire story arc tied into a relationship? And that's what they're doing with him. Mm-hmm. They're minimizing and marginalizing two of our lead characters. And all they're doing with them is making them this melodramatic, mushy, like romantic scenes that, number one, aren't even that interesting to begin with. Each of the characters are interesting.
Yeah.
And I'm just fine with them being together. But we need to now evolve the story. The story cannot be about this relationship that you continue to push. Let's grow past the relationship.
Yeah.
Let them be individuals. Can we please learn about them? That's my only complaint about Discovery as a whole, is the two of them.
Stamets and the doctor. And like,
yeah, Culper, right?
Culper.
His name.
And I'm
fine with both of them. I actually like both of them a lot. Especially the doctor. I think the doctor's cool.
I like him.
We haven't quite gotten a doctor quite like him.
He actually is compassionate.
Yeah.
He's compassionate.
So I do like him quite a bit. I just want to see them grow past the stale relationship. I'm done with it. Keep them in a relationship. That's fine. But let's have them go in their own directions, have them do their own stories, and then remind us every now and again that, oh, yeah, they're in a relationship. But when you make the relationship the focus, it's just not interesting.
And that's
no one gives a shit.
That's why I insert Jet into the scenario. And I loved it because the one problem with Stamets is like, just like what you alluded to, he's in this unending cycle over and over again. Oh, why is me? Why is me? Yeah. Why is me? And all of a sudden he's always sad. He's always hurt. And Jet, oh, dude, I was laughing so hard when Stamets hurts himself and Jet goes, yeah, kind of figured you'd do that.
Well, she's like, great, dude. I would love to get less Culber and Stamets together and more Reno and Stamets.
Yeah.
Because the two of them together, Stamets and Reno, works.
It works.
There's a chemistry there. There's a dynamic there that really works and makes both of them, well, Reno's interesting on her own, but it makes Stamets more interesting.
It makes Stamets more interesting because Reno's there to smack Stamets in the back of the head.
Well, she's a character. She's a character motivator.
Character motivator.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like, she's there to push him forward.
Yeah.
And oh my God, The thing I came to realize after I watched this the second time, Stamets' story at this point wasn't about his relationship. Stamets' story was about how he refuses to constantly turn down help. He refuses to accept help from other people. And this has been an ongoing – I didn't realize this has been a character flaw since season one. And it took basically them inserting Jet into the equation to fix this character flaw.
Hopefully this is the end of that.
Yes.
Like the moment with Jet Reno finally solved his issues of trying to prove himself despite the fact that he's in complete agony.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I hope that we see more, like what you said, of Jet and Stamets together.
We just need to progress.
Yes.
We need to progress. The characters need to grow. And I feel like Stamets and Culper are the only two characters in Discovery that have not grown. So this season is going to be the deciding factor. Yeah. Let's see these characters fucking grow because there's so much potential with these two. Let's do it. Let's push it past the melodrama. So we didn't get any big reveals like in the first episode, but they added a few smaller details. There was a comment, and I don't know if you picked up on this, about the periodic table of elements, that there are new elements that they've never seen before.
Yes.
And when you drop a line of dialogue like that, I can't imagine it just simply being for no reason. It has to mean something, especially when you're dealing with a show that's written like this season. Possibly it's created due to the cataclysmic events, the appearance of new elements. Maybe they'll be used at a later date. We will see. I'm hoping we do return to that. The Corridan connection. I believe that's how you say the name of the alien species. I could be fucking it up, and I apologize. It's very late here in Arizona. The Corridan connection with dilithium was an interesting reveal because it may have something to do, possibly, with the current state of the Corridan people. As we know from our last episode, Dave, they had specifically mentioned that all the dilithium had blown up. No one knew why. Well, this group of Corridans were on a planet that they only knew as a colony. And there were pieces of the planet blown up all around them, stuck in the atmosphere, floating, I'm assuming, stuck in within the gravity of the larger piece of the planet that survived. That's what it looked like, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, the planet Corridan was rich in valuable resources, according to the Star Trek Wiki. And if you remember from Enterprise, and I believe in Deep Space Nine as well, they were most significantly known for dilithium. So if all the dilithium blew up during the burn, then it would stand to reason that the planet's in tatters and pieces because the dilithium basically blew the planet apart.
Yes.
So what we could be witnessing is essentially part of Ground Zero. And that would make sense we introduce this planet and these people.
Yes. And I think you're definitely onto something because it's kind of odd that they would make the reference of this, but
and out of all the alien species, they choose these ones.
Yes.
Yeah. So we'll see. All right. We do need to take a very quick break, David. Don't sigh and complain, Dave. I know you need to just keep talking about Tilly, but we do need to go to a very quick break because we need to pay for this network. Right?
No, you're right.
But I don't have any breaks or audio. I'm trying to waste some time here. All right, we'll be right back.
Cry havoc! And let's slip the dogs of war!
Everything!
All right, get more Star Trek from the holodeck every single month by heading over to our Patreon page, patreon.com/RaymanDigital. Pledge $3 or more a month to gain access to literally hundreds of hours of additional Star Trek from the holodeck discussions. It helps you and it helps us stay on the air. And we give a lot of content. I know when people think Patreon, they think, oh, you offer one piece of content a month, because that's what a lot of those people do. No, not us. We offer so much. We spread our legs for you.
Apparently, it's an epic spreading of the legs.
Uh-huh. All right. Patreon.com/RaymanDigital.
Fair.
Yeah.
No effort put into that one. Life is short. Fuck.
I like that too.
Oh, God. In the most recent study, the site found 30% of its female users are having cyber sex with their affair partners, and 14% of its male users were having virtual sex with theirs.
If you're choosing, okay, if I'm in a relationship with said female, let's say, and she's choosing cyber sex over a real dick, I mean, just fucking end my life. Like, listen, honey, you want to divorce me? Tell me. And then take this knife and slit my wrist and my throat and cut my cock off, because I have no reason to live. If you're cheating on me and you hate me that bad and you're actually trying to have cyber sex.
Not even real sex.
Not even, thank you. Not even real sex.
That's my point. That's my point, Thomas.
It's fucking embarrassing.
Thank you.
Oh, man, that one hit close to home.
I think. Yeah, I think that trigger. That was a trigger. Oh, my God, we triggered.
The Rain Man Show, exclusively on Rain Man Digital. Head over to RainManDigitalMedia.com for more details, or search for it wherever you listen to podcasts. Welcome back, everyone, to Star Trek From the Holodeck. Please be sure to give us reviews on Stitcher and iTunes. Search Star Trek From the Holodeck. Give us a thumbs up. Share those shows. And please give us a review. We need them. We know you're listening. I see the numbers. Our shows are growing exponentially. So please give us a review. Prove that you're listening. Right, David?
Oh, yeah.
I really like this remix.
It is really nice. It's actually...
It makes me feel good.
Yeah. Although I still say the Enterprise theme is still growing on me.
David, I will annihilate you live here in the air.
Been a long road.
Now, Mike. Listen.
Been
a
long road.
Oh, David, I want you to walk into the studio kitchen over there. Grab the knife. I will admit.
I told you.
I hate it.
If you play it.
I hate it as a Star Trek theme, David. It. I hate it as a Star Trek theme. But it's fucking damn catchy.
It is damn catchy.
And I find myself whistling it and singing it quite often.
As much as we love the epic themes, especially that last bit with Deep Space Nine.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, that Deep Space Nine's theme is...
Oh, I love it.
It brings this epic, grandiose feel that Star Trek needs.
Gotta love Deep Space Nine, dude.
But Enterprise, the last couple of years, I've been finding myself singing that song, and it's almost like a brain worm. It sticks inside of you, and it doesn't want to leave.
I want to be a brain worm for T'Pol. Okay, let's just move past that.
That'd all be right. Tucker's brainworm.
We need to move into our final thoughts. I didn't realize we were already at this point. We covered the entire episode. We do have a little bit of news that I want to get into. Some discussions. I believe I can find them. Why don't you start? Give us a little lead off here. We'll do our final thoughts, Dave. And then we'll talk about a few random bits of news before we close out the show. Okay.
Well, my final thoughts on this episode, I'm going to start off with my score, because this is a Star Trek episode that I have been needing for a very long time as a Star Trek fan. At the end of this episode, I felt happy.
Oh, look at you,
absolutely happy.
Happy.
So I'm going to give this score might seem a little high to a lot of people, but hear me out first. I'm going to give this score a 98. The episode was so fun to watch. I felt really good getting reintroduced to the characters of the crew. Getting to see them in different scenarios was fantastic. Seeing the progression of... getting to see their progression as characters is fantastic. And I'm happy that all the stuff that was built up in season 2 is not forgotten. And and I can't wait to see episode 3, how everything fits. And one final thing that we didn't cover that I was so happy about, we do not have to wait for the great mystery of Burnham trying to find the crew. I was dreading that. I was honestly dreading that they would have that for a couple episodes.
Yeah, like half the season was going to be them looking for each other.
Looking for each other.
I agree.
And I was like going, I'm not kidding. I said it earlier. When they get tractor beamed by the other ship out of off the planet, I was like, okay, they're going to leave this on a cliffhanger. All of a sudden, communications opens up. View screen, Burnham. I felt so happy seeing Michael Burnham for the first time in all of Discovery. I'm like going,
It's
been a long time. And it's been a long road getting from there to here. But seeing Burnham, any episode that can make me feel that way about a character the past 2 seasons, I've been saying, I hate your face. David, and all of a sudden I'm like going, I'm so happy to see you.
Admit that I actually kind of felt this song when Burnham showed up and hit the credits. I'm like, holy shit, for the first time in a very long time, I feel fucking good.
And yeah. So that's why, as I said, this probably gets a really surprisingly high score, but writing wise,
So what is the score?
98. I gave it a 98.
Jesus.
That's what I was like, can I give this anything lower? My heart says no, I can't. I cannot give anything lower because there's nothing that I could say I disliked in this episode.
All right. So, Dave, I don't disagree with you. I feel like as a Star Trek fan, it works. Everything just clicks. Everything works. Again, ignoring the trolls out there, I don't understand when they complain, especially about this season so far. But
they don't want to be happy.
Yeah, they don't. But this, I feel like we're in a very good place. Very, very good place. And I've been a fan of Discovery since season 1, but I've had issues. But I would consider myself a legitimate fan of Discovery. I've enjoyed, especially season 2. This season, I feel we're in a really good place to have some of the best Star Trek we've had in years in the form of live action. So I'm very excited for it as a Star Trek fan. Critically, I got to put on my critic hat.
Okay.
I'm going to bring the party down.
This is what I'm this is what I'm really interested in is like, if you think as a critic, is there something that we can pull that basically was not good?
Let me just say this. As a Star Trek fan, I'm right up there with you. 99%. As a critic, though, I had some issues. The writing was good. I wouldn't say it's bad. It's not.
It's not bad.
But the issues with Stamets, they're not great.
They're not great, but don't you agree that they actually made steps to improve it, though?
Absolutely. Absolutely. But they also create an entire problem within the ship. A little bit of a plot device, for a lack of a better reason or name to call it. You have Stamets's stubbornness create an entire issue with the ship where the entire ship almost got swallowed up by parasitic ice, all because he can't admit that he shouldn't be in the Jefferies tube. All they need to do was call someone to help them.
Mm-hmm.
And you create this entire subplot about Stamets and his pain and his inability to accept when he's just not able to do something. And he's in the Jefferies tube. And the ship is going to get swallowed alive. People are going to die. All because Stamets was stubborn. It's just tired. I'm tired of it. Critically. It's not good. They need to move past this terrible character trait of Stamets.
And I think they have. I think they have.
I hope. And I agree. It does feel like this was a bit of the, like, hey, this is an issue you had, Stamets. It's time to move forward now. And with the help of Culbert, and Jet Reno, we're going to get you there. Critically, it just felt a little bit like it was forced. So that's my only complaint. And because of that, I give this a 91%. Still a good grade.
It's still a good grade.
Because it didn't destroy the episode. But because I'm just looking at this continued direction they take Stamets, and then the contrived situation of him just being stubborn. Dude, think about it. His stubbornness was literally a plot device.
It makes you more pissed at that character than even more so when you think about it.
Look at Worf, okay? Probably one of the most stubborn characters in all of Star Trek because of his very narrow view, especially in TNG. In Deep Space Nine, he learned to be a little more objective because he was in command, right? He wasn't just tactical. Very narrow-minded in TNG.
But it worked because we had that idea that it's Klingon nature.
Right.
Right.
Right. But also, exactly. But his stubbornness never put the ship or the crew in jeopardy. And he was so stubborn sometimes where I'm like, you fucking Worf. You son of a bitch. But at the end, he always made the right decision. Stamets
didn't make the right decision.
Dude, you put everyone's life in jeopardy, bro. It was kind of, writing wise, I wouldn't have done that to a character. If I was the writer of this episode, and critically, it looks a little like, it looks contrived. That's all.
And the problem is when you do that in lesser writers' hands, you can make a character absolutely detestable at that point. And that's the risk.
Well, maybe, Dave, the reason why they had to contrive this moment was because they didn't really quite know what to do with Stamets.
Yeah.
Because they have written themselves into a corner with this character. And as you said, and I agree, it does feel like we have finally moved over that hump. It does. It feels like we do have a little bit of resolve when it comes to that aspect of Stamets.
Yeah.
So we'll see, right?
We will see.
All right. We actually don't have time to get into these news topics. We're actually over an hour right now. We're at an hour and 10 minutes.
And see, you could tell that that episode was so good because me and you go over time.
Dude, it breathed, right? It felt like we've been talking for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
All right. So this does bring us to the end. I want to thank everyone for listening. Please consider going to our Patreon page. We need to continue doing these shows because I love talking about Star Trek. And if you enjoy listening to us talk about Star Trek, it's really hard for us to compete with all those other people out there, the big corporate podcasts that are out there. And the only way you can do that is by your reviews and your contribution to our Patreon page. So please, patreon.com/Rainman Digital. David, thank you.
Thank you. Live long and prosper.
I couldn't help but notice your pain.
My pain?
It runs deep. Share it with me.
End simulation.